Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we are back at your service here in Camo X on a beautiful sunny day, 64 degrees. Oh my gosh, that's a dream. So anyway, I love these warm spats in the middle of winter. It, you know, restores me. It literally does. I get out of, you know, get out of my clothes, get out of my coat, and this is great. So we are going to have an exciting hour this hour. This is our second hour of At Your Service. We were talking beer and baseball and political flubs last hour. Well, this hour, it's going to be a little bit more eclectic. We're going to be talking to Dr. Paul Seitz, who is a former White House advisor, and he's an author of a new book. We're going to be talking about air taxis. Literally, in the very near future, we could have sort of Jetsons-like drones following over, carrying people over roads. So fascinating. So we're going to talk with Brent Skorup. He's a senior researcher at the Mercato Institute, and so he's going to tell us a little bit about that. And then if y'all have a single friend, you know, or you yourself are single and you're successful, you have a house, you have a career, you have a social life, but somehow you just haven't found the right person. Well, we're going to have counselor T.L. Adams on, and she's going to, you know, maybe talk about some reasons that might be occurring. If you're actually in the mood to find that special someone, but you haven't been able to do it, maybe some of the reasons why. So we're going to talk about that. That'll be interesting. And then finally, our last segment of the hour, we're going to have David Bailey, who is the owner of Bailey Restaurants. And there's a ton of them, and he's going to talk about all of them, but everything from Bailey's Range to Rooster. Well, he has a new one, and he transformed one of his restaurants into a new concept on Thursday. And I was fortunate enough to dine there on Friday, and it blew my mind. It was wonderful, and it's a phenomenal new concept, and you'll love to hear about how it came about. It's a great history with he and his wife, but what a wonderful restaurant family here in St. Louis. So I'm looking forward to having David Bailey on. So, well, let's get right into it. And we have with us Dr. Paul Seitz. He's the author of the new book called Waging Justice, but he's an award-winning physician. And he was the director of the Data Revolution for Sustainable Development at the State Department, crossing two administrations, both the Obama administration and the Trump administration. Dr. Seitz, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. Good afternoon. How are you?
Well, fascinating, you know, reading about your illustrious history and working at, especially at the State Department, how challenging that must be. Tell me a little bit about your history. I mean, you come from, you know, pretty humble beginnings, and here you are, you know, working at the State Department. How does that happen?
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia. My parents owned a hoagie shop, a sandwich shop.
Cool.
And I went to college, and I was successful there and was able to find my way into medical school. And during medical school, I realized that I wanted to study global health and public health, health of the population. So
fantastic.
I ended up at Johns Hopkins University and learned about smallpox eradication and other global efforts to really bring global health forward. And so that brought me into the kind of diplomacy and development space that the State Department oversees.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, you still know how to make a good sandwich, though, right? Because, I mean, that's a skill. That's a lifelong skill, right? I mean, that would be a shame to learn.
I'm a perfectionist when it comes to the high-quality hoagie. I don't really tolerate anything that isn't the highest standard.
A perfectionist on hoagies. That needs to go on the resume. I think that's the one piece you're missing that you need to put. I mean, I know, you know, physician, State Department, global health, but hoagie perfectionist is a good one. So now you have amazing, you know, working alongside Alicia Keys, Bono, and these other sort of ambassador leaders. Why do we have such ambassadors, and how does it help on the world, you know, health stage? And how did you get to, you know, how did you get in their orbit in doing this?
So I was part of an advocacy movement that was working on trying to bring forward justice and peace in our world. And part of what we were working on was ending the global AIDS crisis. And there was a big movement that included people from the far left and the far right, faith-based organizations and civic groups, the private sector. We're all mobilizing to save lives around the world from the AIDS crisis. And the celebrities, or the very VVIP, I call them, very, very important people, mm-hmm. like Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu, bring moral authority and moral suasion when you're doing advocacy, mm-hmm. and to get your issue on the agenda.
Attention, right. You got to get attention.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's...
Similarly, celebrities like Bono and Alicia Keys, these are pop artists and musicians that have a platform. They have a voice. And you'd be amazed on Capitol Hill if there's a celebrity that's rolled in, you know, the members of Congress go bananas.
Then they all go to the hearing, don't they? I mean, exactly. That's the one hearing they don't miss. I can tell you that.
Exactly.
Well, somehow all this brought you to the State Department, and you worked under both the Obama administration and the Trump administration. How did that go? I mean, how are the different administrations, as far as this issue, how did they differ, and, you know, what was the transition like?
So I worked under both administrations in my most recent cycle of in the government, and you know, the Obama administration, President Bush had launched the Global AIDS Initiative, the President's Emergency mm-hmm. Plan for AIDS Relief in 2003. When Obama came in, he wasn't so committed to it, but over time, he became more committed to it. And I joined the administration as a contractor in the fourth quarter of his administration, the last few years of it.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, he was really strongly committed to ending AIDS globally and also bringing forward other important global agreements like the Paris Climate Accord and the Sustainable Development Goals, which are focusing on ending poverty and achieving gender equality.
Okay.
When President Trump came in, I think that in the beginning of his administration, there was Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, and the State Department was in a bit of turmoil. I think things have stabilized now under Mike Pompeo, and the president reasserted U.S. leadership, and he signed a bill. This never hits the news. This is the good news that's actually mm-hmm. happened. He reauthorized the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief for another 5-year cycle.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, congratulations. Yeah, your work will be going forward.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about it is that it's a bipartisan coalition. So despite what you hear in the media most of the time, that members of Congress don't get anything done, there is stuff that's happening, and there is cross-partisan collaboration.
How close are we to ending AIDS?
Well, I think that we have a long way to go. We've made significant progress. We've saved approximately 30 million lives with life-saving AIDS medicines. But the virus is still spreading, and there's still a threat. There is a large population of young people who are at risk. And, you know, every cohort of people that become sexually active become at risk.
Absolutely. And they need to be reeducated. I mean,
and be reeducated. Yeah. It's a paradox in a way. When I was living in Africa in the late 90s, and I tell these stories in my book, Waging Justice, people were they were getting skinny and they were dying. And then the society went into like a panic mode. They saw the death in front of them. And so they were more motivated to change their behavior. Now, very few people are dying because life-saving AIDS medicines are widely available. But the young people are not seeing the impact if they don't practice safe sexual behavior. So it's a
different battle. I mean, you know, it goes to a different front. So if people want to get your book, how do they get it?
The book is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and through Balboa Press on all three of those websites.
Oh, well, I could talk to you for 4 hours, and I'm sorry we're running out of time, and hopefully we'll get to chat again. But we have been speaking with Dr. Paul Zeitz, who is an award-winning physician and was the director of the Data Revolution for Sustainable Development at the State Department under both Presidents Obama and Trump. And his book, Waging Justice, talks about his history with all of this, you know, the global health crises that he's been working on. So it's been a pleasure having you, and hope you can come back soon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Have a great day, doctor. Thank you.
Bye.
So we're going to take another short break. Very fascinating. But we're going to come back and we're going to be talking about air taxis. I know you think this is like crazy, you know, sci-fi fantasy stuff, but air taxis are, you know, could be here soon. And Boeing, local favorite company here, they're a big, I guess, financier of the getting this technology to market. So we're going to be talking to senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center, Brent Skirup, and he's going to give us the latest on that. So come back after the break. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX. And we are back with At Your Service on Super Bowl Sunday. So what is everybody doing for Super Bowl Sunday? I'm just going to be hating on the Rams, basically. And anyone who knows me, follows my Twitter feed, knows that I am certainly not a Tom Brady or a Patriots fan. And, you know, Tom Brady wears UGG boots. But I am still so bitter at Stan Kroenke and the Rams for lying and leaving that I am going to root for the Patriots. So it's, yeah, I had to dig deep for that, people. It really did. I'm a YouTube-trained cake decorator. And so once I post my cakes once in a while on Twitter or Facebook, but I did a number 12, you know, decorated cake because of my rage toward the Rams. And on top of that, Isaac Bruce not getting into the Hall of Fame. I mean, what a fraud. So, I mean, the Reverend, I don't know how that even happens. So, you know, it's just, I'm anti-Rams. You know, I love Isaac Bruce and I love some of the players, but yeah, so I'll be cheering for the Cheatriots and hopefully there won't be any cheating and hopefully it'll be an exciting game. And I haven't seen a lot of the Super Bowl commercials like overplaying. So I'm actually kind of excited to see some of the commercials without having been, you know, already tired of them before the day of the game. So that ought to be at least interesting. And I'm sure I'll just eat a ton of food. So I just give in and eat the food. So we are now talking about a very interesting topic. We're talking about like air taxis, literally drones carrying humans flying over the street. And I know that it, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Jetsons where everybody flew around in these little air taxis. And you think it's right out of a sci-fi novel or movie, but it's not, and it's real. And so we are having a discussion with Brent Skirup, who's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center, and he's researching the emergency, you know, transportation revolution in air taxis. So it's an exciting topic, and we're happy to welcome him. Brent, welcome to At Your Service on KMOX.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And air taxis, they go by various names or industry terms, I think. You know, in the public or in newspapers, they might be called flying cars, and they've gotten this name air taxis because the belief is that they will namely be a shuttle service, a commercial shuttle service, not personal vehicles. But in short, they're flying cars, and they're big passenger drones that carry typically between one and six people. There are gas powered ones, but there are a lot of companies working on electric, battery-powered ones, and it's quietly advanced very rapidly. And
really? Because that was the next question I was going to ask you. So, okay, I mean, I watched the Jetsons. I'm like, okay, we're getting into Jetsons territory where, you know, you have the cars hovering over the road. I mean, is that essentially what it is? You're not high enough where you're interfering with planes or helicopters, and you're not on the road, so you're somewhere in between.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, what kind of time frame are we talking about? When you say this is sort of escalated, I mean, what kind of time frame could we start seeing these?
So many national governments and many aerospace companies are investing heavily in this, and they see a path forward to commercialization. The typical number you see thrown out for commercial service is 2025.
Wow.
So that's not that far away.
What a dream that would be.
Yeah, and, you know, the big question is, yeah, I would say that there's an assumption this will happen. There will be commercial service. It's a matter of
how
expensive will it be, and will this be a mass market service or kind of a glorified helicopter service for certain urban areas.
Now, I'm assuming obviously cost would be something that has to be dealt with, but then the right-of-way. I mean, that space, and, you know, how do you, I mean, certainly they regulate drones, so certainly they're going to, this has to be regulated, and how this industry would basically be set up. I mean, I would imagine there's a lot of open questions there.
Yeah, the regulatory side is probably the biggest obstacle, and not that U.S. regulators are opposing the industry. They are very cautious. They are very they want to make sure it's safe, because American airplane regulation in general is very, very safe. So they want to continue that. Many at the FAA and the NASA, which are the primary aviation regulators, they welcome this technology, but it's an open question. So current air traffic control for planes are handling at any one time a few thousand airplanes mm-hmm. over U.S. airspace.
This would change everything.
And with small drone delivery drones, and then in addition, these air taxis, you're looking at possibly hundreds of thousands of aircraft in federal airspace, and that's traditional air traffic control cannot handle that. And
I mean, you actually need to basically redo the infrastructure to allow this which may need to happen anyway. I mean, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, we're really needing air traffic controllers in the United States, and this would only create larger demand, and so there probably would have to be an overhaul of how we deliver this service and this safety and this regulation.
Yeah, and U.S. regulators, I think regulators worldwide, understand that they really need to start from a blank slate, that the traditional way of doing air traffic control, I mean, that's not going away, but it can't be scaled to handle this. All these drones and all these air taxis that may be coming in the next decade or so.
I mean, this could revolutionize a lot of transportation. I mean, you know, if you're looking at, I could see where this would be entirely new. And, governments are not quick to getting into, you know, to doing these kinds of things. So I could see where this could be a challenge.
Yeah, that's right. This industry is moving much faster than regulation can keep up, as you can imagine. And regulators are doing their best, but just the nature of regulation means that their hands are tied in some respects, and they are looking for alternative models to the current system.
Are there other countries who are working on this, who are maybe further along on, you know, supporting this technology and this innovation?
Yeah, a few countries pop up. A lot of the investment is in test. The investment is happening often in the U.S. And I believe Boeing plans to start testing the service this year, and Uber wants to start testing in the Dallas area next year. But there are some countries further along. China has moved very rapidly on this, and they've actually done autonomous air taxi flights.
Really?
This company called EHang. I think it's only one or two passenger drone, but
still,
they've done a few dozen autonomous flights last year, and so they're far ahead. I would say Japan really is taking this seriously. They have regulators that are putting together a plan forward to make Japan a leader in this, and just with all the density you have in Japanese cities and a very tech-friendly public, Japan is also leading the way.
Wow. Well, this is incredible updates. I mean, I when you say 2025 at the idea of having, you know, these air taxis, that's amazing. I mean, I think a lot of people would welcome a change in transportation, but this is... I think people will be, it will be hard. People will be nervous, but what a great innovation.
Yeah, and I think, and part of what I see my job is doing is writing about this and acclimating people to this. I think it's an exciting technology, and hopefully it does transform transportation in America.
As we know it, we need it.
Rural areas, urban areas, and everywhere.
Well, I'm so excited. We were talking to Brent Skorup, who's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center, and he has a new paper out called Auctioning Airspace, which is a fascinating title. And where could people find the article if they would like to read more about air taxis?
So you can find my work on Mercatus.org, and I had a op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in November. And so if you Google that, you can find my short piece in the Wall Street Journal talking about air taxis and this proposal that U.S. regulators auction aerial corridors to jumpstart this industry in the U.S.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on, and I probably will come torment you again as we get further along to get more updates. I mean, Boeing is near and dear to our heart here in St. Louis, so I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about that, and we would be a good audience for people to help you get people acclimated to this new technology. So hopefully you'll come back.
It's an exciting area. Thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
Have a good one.
All right, bye-bye. All right. Well, that was fascinating. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about that single friend you have, or you being the single woman, and maybe some reasons for that. It'll be very interesting talking to a counselor. And then we're going to have in studio David Bailey of Bailey Restaurant. So do not miss it and come back after the break. This is Jane Duker, KMOX. And we are back for At Your Service on Super Bowl Sunday afternoon. So for those of you boycotting, that's good. You can stay on KMOX. We are replaying Game 6, the most famous game 6 of all time tonight. So if you'd rather just listen to Cardinal baseball, you can always do that starting at 5 o'clock. So our next guest, she's a counselor. Her name's T.L. Adams. And she is author of the new book, Get Rid of Your Stupid List, 7 Reasons Why You Are Successful and Still Single. So she has master's degrees in both counseling and business administration, and I think she's going for her PhD. So we are either that single woman who's successful, who, you know, doesn't have that special someone in their life, or we may know someone. So hopefully this will be helpful information. Hi, TL. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Jane. How you doing?
Good. So, okay. So we all either know someone or are this person. And so this is, you know, I was reading some of your information. It's incredibly helpful. So The first thing I want to ask you, how do you know if you're the problem?
I realized that I was the problem because I just kept finding problems in everybody else. And I was like, is it really the guys? I keep finding something wrong with every guy that I came across. I was like, okay, he's too short, or he didn't say this right. And I was like, hold on. If I keep coming across all these different guys and I'm up here keep questioning myself, like, why I can't find a guy, it's not the guys that's the problem, it's me. Like, I'm the problem because I have all these opportunities, but I don't pick any of them.
And is it, you know, do you think it's, you know, a lot of times I hear that when people who often criticize others a lot, it's really because they're not happy with themselves. And until you sort of get that resolved, it's difficult to sort of view other people in a positive light.
I definitely experienced that, especially going through a divorce and finding out that the person that I was with, you know, really wasn't happy with me. So I was like, okay, so what's wrong with me?
Right.
There must be something wrong with me, you know, and I was with this person for 7 years. We were married for 6. So if somebody tell you I'm not happy with you and then the marriage ends, it's like, okay, how could this other person possibly be happy with me? So I'm trying to question myself every time someone tells me a compliment or anything. So it's a constant criticism against myself. So when I had to go through counseling when I went through my counseling degree. They require counselors to go through therapy. So that's when I started reflecting and looking at myself.
And then you figured out that, you know, there were probably a lot of people who go through this exact problem. I mean, do men have unreasonable expectation and lists, you know, that prohibit them from actually, you know, reaching the goal if they actually want someone to getting them?
I think men and women.
Okay.
I think we both have lists. We all want a perfect person, but I had realized that perfect person don't exist.
That's right. And you can't be perfect either. So
no, like we all make mistakes or something. Like we just have to, when we meet someone, we have to come to a point like, okay, can I deal with this? And I'd rather deal with a guy that have less money, treat me well, love me, someone I can trust around me and my kids versus someone that has everything, the six-pack, the money, the cars, and he can't be faithful.
Yeah.
So I'd rather, that's my preference.
So what's
we all have preferences.
Absolutely. And you know, and you know, you have to accommodate. If you want to be in a relationship, there's always, you know, a certain amount of accommodating without doing too much accommodating. It's always that delicate balance. So what's the first step to changing the way that you sort of evaluate people?
Well, I start questioning myself, why am I really single? What am I really looking for? What is it that I can say, okay, what do I really need and what do I want? So I really need someone because I'm in a situation that I have kids. Mm-hmm. So before I got married, I didn't have kids. I was 21 when I got married. It was just me. So now that I'm older, I'm almost 37, my needs and wants changed. So the things that I looked for at 20
are very different now.
I'm looking for a different type of guy now. I'm looking for someone that can fit into my life with my kids right now versus someone that just has all the material things, because throughout the book, if you read Why Am I Successful, I'm Beautiful, I'm Successful, Why Am I Single, throughout that chapter, you will find that I talked about losing jobs. When I went through my divorce, I lost a couple of jobs. I got real sick medically. So it's just a different perspective. You look at things different as you change and get older. So your needs and wants change. So
well,
you have to figure out
what you need. I mean, and that's and while it's simple, it's not easy.
You know,
no. you still have to do the work. I mean, the work is still there where you have to say, you know, you can't really judge anyone else until you know where you are and what you need. And if you're not able to do that, then does that basically show you've got some work to do?
Right. And it's a constant. We're a constant work in progress. No one has made it. No one is there yet. Like I said, there is no perfect person. So you just have to find the perfect person for you.
That's right. And so, but to do that, you have to know what you want. And sometimes that's not always clear. And that's where, you know, looking at yourself probably goes a lot further than judging everybody that's in your path.
Right. Because for me, when I started dating after my divorce, I eliminated guys after one conversation. I didn't give anybody a chance because I was like, oh, my God, I heard this before. I don't want to. But then I'm questioning myself, like, why I can't find a man? Why am I single? I want to be married, too. I see everybody getting married and having that love, and I was like, I dismiss it. I didn't even give it a chance.
Well, you weren't ready. Now you're starting to work through it. That's amazing.
Right. It takes time.
It takes time, and give yourself a chance to do that so that you can do it in the right way. So if people want to find your book, how do they find your book?
I am on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Also, I self-published, so I'm on Archway Publishing website. If you do a search for Get Rid of Your Stupid List, you can find me.
Oh, great. Yep. Again, the name of the book is Get Rid of Your Stupid List, 7 Reasons You Are Successful and Still Single. Well, TL, I congratulate you on your journey. I mean, it's never easy, and like you said, we're always a work in progress. But thanks for the tips. You know, look at yourself first, and that's usually where it starts.
Thank you for having me.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Excellent. All right, so we're going to take a short break. And on the other end, we are going to be, he's in studio, I'm so excited, David Bailey, who is the owner of Bailey's Restaurants. And there's so many good ones, as you all know. And so we have to hear, though, about his new place, the transformation of one restaurant into another. What a concept. And I've eaten there. And let me just tell you, I'll just cut to the quick. It's amazing. You have to go. But he can tell us all about it because the way he tells the story is pretty heartwarming and only makes the restaurant even better. So come back. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX. And hello, everybody. We are back with At Your Service on a beautiful Sunday afternoon in St. Louis. I see lots of people out. It's really nice. I can't wait to get out there myself before it gets cold again. I think we have a couple days, maybe a little bit of rain, but at least we're not going to be covering our faces for fear of frostbite. So this is good stuff. So I have in studio David Bailey. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
And you'll recognize the name Bailey because you know of all the Bailey's restaurants around town. And he has 8 of them. So, I mean, you know, we're talking, this is restaurant royalty here, and I'm happy to have him. And he also has event space, which we're going to talk about that as well. But I was fortunate enough on Friday to go to the first day of opening. I wasn't there for the transformation, but the first opening of Pop St. Louis.
Yep.
And so tell everybody about Pop St. Louis, why it's different. It's amazing, by the way. Just I'll cut to that chase. And how you transformed one of your restaurants into the new concept.
So we had this idea. My general manager had a stroke of genius, and he said, hey, if we're going to complete the transformation of this building, we're going to open this restaurant Pop, we should do it while people are having dinner and while the room is full and has really good energy, and we can basically just unveil the new restaurant, roll out the new menu, all the new decor, new glassware, new wine list and everything all at once. So it had this awesome energy throughout the evening.
And you had stuff covered up.
Yeah.
Like the walls. And they had to be thinking, okay, what is this about? You know, I mean, did the guests know?
Nope, they didn't know.
You surprised them.
Yeah, we just told everybody that we wanted them to come join us for a special dinner. We didn't even tell them what the address was until the day before. Because we didn't, you know, we knew that people were going
to
try. Yeah, we knew people were going to try to guess or, you know, figure it out. But and we had to have some stuff staged, like the new wallpaper was up ahead of time. And we just had that hidden and covered. We got to do a big like unveiling and lots of cool elements.
I saw the video and it was awesome. So go to Instagram and watch it because it's great. And the wallpaper is stunning. And this is how you know it's really cool is I was there Friday night and every female stopped in front of that wallpaper to have their picture taken or to do a selfie. So that ought to tell you the background is a hit. And tell us about, well, first of all, it's located. Give everybody the location and sort of what it transformed from and what it transformed to.
So it's at 1915 Park Avenue in Lafayette Square. Mm-hmm. And that's the address and location of our very first restaurant, Bailey's Chocolate Bar. So it's we had Chocolate Bar on the first floor of that space for several years, and then we actually took over the second floor as well and kind of used it as a bit of a lounge, you know, place for like groups of 20 or 30 doing private parties and things like that. At the end of the day, though, I wanted to update the space and transform it into something that had a full kitchen, had more seating, and was just a little more, frankly, just more comfortable even than Chocolate Bar was. So we moved Chocolate Bar completely upstairs to the second floor. And then we turned the first floor into a restaurant called L'Cadian originally, and it was a Cajun restaurant. We did that in conjunction with a TV pilot, but at the end of the day, that was never really the ultimate plan for the space. It was just kind of an interim way to get the space transformed, to get the kitchen updated and things like that.
The infrastructure
and everything in there.
What was your dream?
So the story behind Pop is that I've always had a list of restaurants that I wanted to be able to open ever since I decided that I wanted to have a restaurant of my own. I was fortunate enough to be able to. And, you know, that included a vegetarian whiskey lounge, which is our restaurant Small Batch that we have over in Midtown now. That included a martini lounge, that's Chocolate Bar. It included a burger joint, that's our Bailey's Range Burger and Shake restaurant downtown. A craft beer bar, that's our Bridge Tap House and Wine Bar that has 55 craft beers on tap, and so forth. But after I actually met my wife 15 years ago while I was working at a different local restaurant, and when we first started dating, pretty much right away, bubbles, champagne, sparkling, cava, prosecco, anything that was sparkling wine was fair game, and that was our go-to beverage. And so not too long after we started dating, I added Pop along with the name. That was what I wanted to call it for the last 15 years to my list. And so we finally got to open that one for real and have that one come to fruition.
And that was the one. That's the labor of love one. And everything else you did, but that was the one that was, you know, you and hers. And
yep, exactly.
And so, okay, so we're here with David Bailey of Bailey's Restaurants, and he's telling us about his new restaurant, Pop. And I tasted numerous of the champagne/sparkling wine on the list. I mean, to die for. Great selections. And what I loved, too, was the ambiance. And you said it. And as soon as you said it, I was like, yes, it just feels light, summery, no matter what time of the year. Like, you kind of feel like, you know, because if you're drinking, you know, light, bubbly, I mean, you're thinking of, you know, summertime. But what I love now is like, okay, that's not just for summer now. You can go and have bubbly anytime. And it's not just one or two on the list. There's a whole menu that's catered toward that. And for people like me, I'm a bubble person. There is no other bubbles place. So this is, it's great.
Yeah, so we want bubbles to be for the everyday. So we're actually calling Pop a sparkling bar because we don't just have champagne, obviously. Right. We do have some great champagnes, but we have sparkling wines from all over the world. You know, whether you're talking domestics like California or, you know, Oregon, we have them from South Africa, from Germany, Italy, Spain, all over, you know, all over the world. Because sparkling wine is a, you know, it's a tradition that goes back, you know, centuries, and it's done well everywhere. So we, and in addition to having the variety, we have over 90 different sparkling by the bottle. And we also have currently 9 available by the glass. So you can, you know, try a bunch of different little things. And if you, okay, I really like that particular style, you know, pop a bottle after that.
Right. And, yeah. and I will tell you, the staff, everybody wonderful in that. If you don't know a lot, still go, because they help teach you. And I was like, okay, so why do I like this one? Or what about this one is unique? And so everybody's really knowledgeable, and everybody was very thoughtful for those of us who don't know a lot but know that they like bubbles.
And you don't have to spend a ton of money either. We do have a couple, you know, more expensive actual champagnes on there, but for the most part, you know, you can get a bottle ranging anywhere from under $30 all the way up.
That's great. Now, we have to talk about the food. I mean, the food is, it's outrageous. It's so good. And there was not one thing that we didn't try that wasn't amazing. So, I mean, what was the inspiration of the food? I mean, because it's eclectic.
Yeah.
But it's not a huge menu, and it's not overwhelming. I like that, because I hate to go into like a menu where there's like, you know, too much, and you think, okay, this can't all be good. But you seem to have honed in on some phenomenal dishes. What inspired you for the different dishes on the menu?
So when we were thinking about champagne, you know, what it is it's these exciting bubbles that are sort of, they're held back in this bottle. They're just waiting and waiting to come out, right? And they can sit in that bottle and you don't really know necessarily. And then all of a sudden you pop that cork and it's just a burst of flavor, and it's the tingle of the bubbles. So we wanted to carry that over into the cuisine as well. And then also look at the tradition of Method Champenois of making champagne and other sparkling wines, where the carbonation and the development of the champagne actually happens inside the bottle. So we looked at different ways that we could ferment vegetables and have sauces that were made in French traditions, and all these just little things that were just sort of a nod to champagne.
Yeah.
But the food is not squarely French by any means.
Mm-mm.
And what we really wanted was recognizable ingredients with really bold and striking flavors and colors, and not be restrained in those at all.
Well, you did accomplish that. So the chicken breast, you think, okay, chicken, you know, okay, another chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But you, I think what you said is you got under the skin and you put the sage and the lemon underneath the skin.
So we preserve lemons. So we pack them with sugar and let them sit for, you know, weeks and weeks until they, you know, that sugar's been absorbed in the lemon. And then we make a sauce with the preserved lemon and sage, and we actually rub that onto the chicken breast between the breast and the skin before we put that down on the grill.
Ridiculous.
And it's, yeah, so that whole thing is just infused with those bright flavors and that hint of sweet. And
it did feel like summer.
Wonderful.
Because you have, you know, a light champagne and the chicken, and I was like, ugh. And then, of course, okay, the beef stew. It's everything I live for. I mean, it is the most tender meat and the noodles and I guess you call it gravy or whatever the sauce is. I mean, I could just eat that with bread, you know,
totally,
for weeks. So what inspired you on that one? I mean, it's an old school dish that's totally remade and it's modernized, but tastes great.
Yeah. So thinking about the winter weather that we're still having, we wanted to have a hearty dish on there that you could have, you know, a glass of, you know, more hearty champagne, you know, could stand up to it, but you could really eat it with anything. Or drink anything with it. But the beef stew is, it's a 2-day braise, so, you know, very, very low and very, very long. Ale, vinegar, spices, it just creates its own sauce, essentially, with all the different, you know, veggies and beef that's in there. And then we make a gremolata that goes on top, so you have that burst of bright flavor from the parsley and lemon and almond and everything that kind of offsets that richness from the meat and the gravy.
If you're not hungry now, there is something completely wrong with you. But I can tell you, I had that, and then also the focaccia. And this man fries his french fries in bacon fat. So if you, you're going to be ruined off of every other french fry ever after you have these. I mean, I could talk to him for about an hour and a half, but he has told me, if you are anti-Super Bowl, which of course a lot of St. Louisans are today, you can go to Pop. They're having dinner tonight.
Yep.
And so no TVs. You don't even have to deal with it in the background. So go. Yep. I recommend it highly. It's amazing. And thank you for letting me come. It was beautiful. It was a great meal, and I would recommend it to anyone.
Thank you. Yeah, we loved having you.
Awesome. So he has other restaurants, though. Real quick, we got less than a minute left. But we have engagement season going on, so people are planning weddings. Tell us briefly about Willow and Slate and those event spaces that they can look at quickly if
yeah.
they're planning a wedding.
We have two really beautiful event spaces. They can be used in conjunction with each other. You could have a wedding ceremony and then walk over to the other event space for the actual party afterwards. But yeah, Willow's a beautiful space, white branch chandeliers throughout, floor-to-ceiling windows. We've got all the AV needs and everything like that. So.
Okay. I hate to even cut you off. We're cutting out Jane Duker at your service on KMOX. Get us on the web. Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no. I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.